Behind every pioneering idea, method, and device is a fellow human or humans, a trailblazer who is daring enough to ask the questions that push the boundaries and make the impossible possible. I'm Sharon Kedar, co-founder of North Pond Ventures, a multi-billion dollar science-driven venture capital firm, and the host of Innovate and Elevate. In each episode, we'll have candid, in-depth conversations with top doctors, scientists, and innovators about leading-edge discoveries and how they impact our lives. Season 1 focuses on women's health with the aim of helping women lead our healthiest lives. You'll hear from leading experts such as Dr. Catherine Rexrode, Division Chief, Women's Health at Harvard's Brigham Hospital. It's time for all of us to innovate and elevate. We have the brilliant Dr. Rachel Brem today on the podcast. Dr. Brem is board certified in diagnostic radiology. She is professor of radiology and the vice chair of radiology at the George Washington University of Medicine and Health Sciences. She is also the director of breast imaging and intervention. Dr. Brem has her own foundation, the Brem Foundation. Dr. Brem, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
If I may ask about your breast cancer history, I think the audience would really appreciate hearing your story and context before we get into taking the listener and the viewer into your doctor's office.
Oh, absolutely. So I became a radiologist, and then I subspecialized in breast imaging. While I was at Hopkins, I was the director of breast imaging at Hopkins. And I was charged with finding equipment that we needed. We needed an ultrasound unit. And so what I would do is, after a day of seeing patients, I would ask all the vendors to bring their machines in and then try it out on myself. And I did indeed figure out which ultrasound machine we were going to buy. But I also found my own breast cancer. And here I am scanning, and there was no doubt in my mind what it was. There was this rush of emotion. First of all, I felt profound gratitude that I knew what I wanted. I couldn't understand how my patients, dealing with the very same situation, had to make these incredible decisions without the kind of lifelong commitment to education and practice within the field of breast cancer. And, you know, the other thing was that it was another example of early detection. We weren't supposed to use this technology, but it was almost prophetic because now we use a lot of ultrasound for screening and we know how effective it is in women with dense breasts. So I felt, even at that point, it was perplexing to me, why aren't we using ultrasound for screening? And I ended up spending a fair amount of my career really focusing on ultrasound screening in women with dense breasts. I found my own breast cancer, but it was an interesting time because it was 1996, and in 1994, the BRCA gene was identified. And my mother had had breast cancer at a very young age. We're Ashkenazi Jews, although we only know that later, but a lot of Jews had breast cancer. And I had decided that I would get tested for the BRCA gene. And I was tested. I turned out positive on BRCA1 positive. And I remember saying to my husband that if I don't have the gene, that we'll have another child. And if I do have the gene, I'm going to have prophylactic mastectomies. There wasn't a lot of data. We didn't know what that did. Now we know that it's, you know, a very reasonable consideration for people at substantially increased risk, people who have the gene like I do. But I knew that I had to do that. And so I had already been scheduled for prophylactic mastectomies, and I was going to have my ovaries out at the same time as well. And between scheduling my surgery and having it is when I did this and found my own breast cancer.
How old were you, just so the audience?
37. I learned another really important lesson, that cancer takes its own timeline, that you think you can outsmart it, but you may or may not be able to. And of course, many women have successful prophylactic mastectomies these days. But, you know, I missed my window of opportunity, and I went from having prophylactic mastectomies to having breast cancer and a prophylactic mastectomy on the other side. I tried to outsmart cancer. Cancer didn't let me, but that doesn't mean that other people can't do that.
Dr. Brem, when it comes to breast cancer, how does a woman know if she is high risk or low risk?
The definition of high risk is if you have a 20% or greater lifetime risk of developing breast cancer. An intermediate risk is 15 to 20%, and Average risk is below 15%. So how do you know that? Well, there are certain things that put you automatically into a higher risk. One is if you have a genetic mutation or that is associated with a high risk of breast cancer. If you've had a personal history of breast cancer, you are at much higher risk and at high risk of developing another breast cancer. If you've had a biopsy that shows this unusual findings called atypia, you're at higher risk. The older you get, the higher your risk of breast cancer throughout life. That doesn't mean that every older woman is at high risk, lifetime risk of breast cancer, but it means that if together with these other factors, as you get older, your risk of developing breast cancer increases.
For a woman who knows that in their family, there's a family history of breast cancer, a mother, an aunt, what is the rule of thumb for the age that that woman needs to start screening?
That's a great question. Every woman should start screening 5 to 10 years earlier than the age that their single first-degree relative or two second-degree relatives develop breast cancer. So if your mother developed breast cancer at 40, you should start screening at 30 to 35. But the extension of that question is, if I have the gene mutation, or when should I start screening? And the answer is probably not before 25, because there's no intervention before. And between 18 and 25, it's a hard time emotionally to process the information of a gene mutation, and you're not going to do anything about it anyway. Really, the best way to find out if you're at high risk is to take one of these online available tests, one of which is one that was launched by the Brem Foundation recently called Checkmate. It's a very simple 3-minute interactive tool that will determine if you should at least have a discussion with your healthcare provider about being at high risk and needing additional testing. There are many online, Tyre Cusick, Gale. You certainly can ask your doctor to help you find the mechanism to determine if you're at a high enough risk that you need an MRI. But every woman who has a dense breast tissue is at least at intermediate risk of breast cancer and should have additional screening with ultrasound or MRI.
Dr. Brem, how much less effective are mammograms for women with dense breasts?
Great question. So if you have almost no breast density, what we call A density by the BI-RADS categorization, the mammograms are 90%+ effective, okay? If you have the dense breasts, right, so C and D, we miss 50 and some studies up to 60% of breast cancers. Having dense breast tissue is a big deal because it happens in half of American women, and it makes mammograms so much harder to read, and it increases your risk of breast cancer. It's kind of like the perfect storm. We do have ways to find these hidden cancers. If you have dense breast tissue, you should at least have an ultrasound every year, either at the same time of your mammogram or spaced out by 6 months, because we can find 25% more of these important breast cancers when we do ultrasound screening in women with dense breasts.
What's really important for the viewer and the listener to understand is you need to get information for yourself about your doctor. You need to know if your doctor has certain views versus other views. What are their biases? Are you aligned with that? Because there's different screening philosophies. And just understanding that, it's not like getting a flu test. This is a controversial area about how much screening to do.
I think what I would say is that women have to get the knowledge for themselves and be empowered with the information for them, so that even if their doctor is not aligned perfectly with them for the optimal breast cancer screening, which is appropriate for them, that they need to know what that is and they need to advocate for that. Maybe the real message is don't rely on others to find that out for you.
Mammography being the primary screening tool that we have today as a start, how should a patient think about when they go get a mammogram?
You should insist that whoever interprets your mammogram does a lot of mammography. At our institution, all the breast imagers, all the radiologists who do breast imaging do nothing but breast imaging. That's the best, but at least 70% breast imaging, and you have the right to ask who's going to interpret my mammogram. I want someone who does a lot of 70% mammography or breast imaging to do it. And then if you have dense breasts, raise your voice and insist on getting at least an ultrasound, if not an MRI.
When it comes to ultrasound, your belief is that any woman with dense breasts should have an annual screening ultrasound. You wrote about that so beautifully. Get the book if you don't have it. No Longer Radical, such a helpful book, published last year. So can you talk about why we are not in that place today?
If you have dense breast tissue, you really do need additional tests. And that could be an ultrasound. It could be a contrast enhanced mammography. It could be molecular breast imaging. Contrast enhanced mammography, molecular breast imaging, and MRI all require an injection. Ultrasound does not. It's a quick and easy test that a plastic piece goes over your entire breast. There's probably a little bit of compression, but it's not painful. It's not difficult. It is not the standard of care today. Part of the reason is that we don't have enough resources in this country to do that for the 50% of women who have dense breast tissue. And that's just the reality. We don't have the manpower to do it. An MRI is a big machine that makes very loud clanging sounds that you're in a tube. That's just the reality. Now, if you're going to pay out of pocket, it is a very expensive test. And most of the time, it really requires insurance coverage. If you're going to pay out of pocket, I would say there are an increasing number of out-of-pocket screening MRI programs that use what's called abbreviated breast MRI that are faster, still require this injection, but sometimes, you know, you can pay out of pocket for as low as $250.
If a woman has a choice between the standard MRI and the abbreviated MRI, do you have a perspective on which is better?
They're both fine.
Okay.
For screening purposes.
Okay. When is MRI standard of care in today's world?
MRI is standard of care if you have a gene mutation, if you have that affords a markedly increased risk of breast cancer, like BRCA1, BRCA2, but there are many other CDH1, P53, many. There are over 70 genes that have been identified with a markedly increased risk. It turns out if your lifetime risk is 20% or greater, then you will be eligible for MRI. Almost every insurance company will cover it. The problem is that every risk assessment tool is different. So one risk assessment tool might make you 15% and another might make you 25%. It's not an exact science, but 20% lifetime risk or greater, MRI should be covered by your insurance company. But there is a copay and a deductible as of now.
What do you see on the horizon in terms of new modalities for early detection?
So what I see on the horizon is one step before imaging. You know, the ideal is a couple of things, is to find it even before we can see it. And there are increasing technologies being developed, things like liquid biopsy, things like breath analysis, looking for, or you know, volatile organic compounds that may be an indicator of cancer or non-cancer, not here yet. Many other technologies that are being developed to think about early detection even earlier than we think of it now. And I can't help but believe that our survival will be even better.
Well, Dr. Brehm, thank you. You have been such an inspiration for all the viewers and listeners. Please check out Brehm Foundation and also Dr. Brehm's book, No Longer Radical. It's a great primer to understand your risk level, and it's a great follow-up to this podcast. Thank you again for being on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for tuning in. Please connect with me, Sharon Kedar, on LinkedIn for additional innovative content. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate it, leave a review, and follow the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. The views and opinions of the host and podcast guests are their own professional opinions and may not represent the views of North Pond Ventures.